Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcast. So in podcast 723, I'm going to do something I haven't done in a long time, which is to take a slice from the day's news events and give you my favorite stories. So in podcast 723, my favorite news stories from the past few days. Used to do this all the time, every day, actually, in preparing for radio shows. Haven't done it in a long time, and I'm just going to try to do fun stuff, not real heavy stuff, although there will be some heavy stuff, but just kind of easing people back into the week, scanning and finding some stories that catch my eye, and we'll talk about it in podcast 723. I don't know about you, but I don't drink the tap water in my town. I buy bottled water. For one thing, it doesn't taste very good, and then it's the possible pollution from decades ago, groundwater pollution, toxins that are odorless and tasteless and colorless. And yes, I spend a lot of money, actually too much money on bottled water. And I buy cheap bottled water. I buy $3.99 and $2.99 cases of water when they're on sale, whether it's Dasani or it's the Trader Joe's water or whatever. And I'll buy two or three cases at a time. So I've got a stockpile. And of course, you got to carry it in from the car and up the stairs and all this other stuff. Now, there is a solution to this. A friend was telling me the other day that he can make my tap water more pure and better tasting than bottled water. And I was like, what? Because I didn't know this. But yes, it's true. It's affordable. All the better. If you want to know more about this, check out MasterPlumberMN.com. That's MasterPlumberMN.com. There's also a banner at the top of the page at the BobDavisPodcast.com, which is entitled Water Butler. You can see it up there. It's a red, white, and blue banner. The guys at Water Butler can set you up with a water purification that will end your dependence on bottled water forever. Here's what you do. Call 763-286-8328, 763-286-8328. If you live in St. Louis, Park Rogers, Maple Grove, Edina, Plymouth, or Minnetonka, I already know people in those towns are worried about the groundwater. They are worried about the well water. They are worried about their water. And in some of those towns, the water don't taste too good. So it is time to purify your water right from the source with the Water Butler. 68 years of experience with plumbing, 30 years of experience with water filtration systems. 763-286-8328. That's 763-286-8328. Click on the banner at the top of the page at the BobDavisPodcast.com or visit MasterPlumberMN.com. Click on that banner at the top of the page at the BobDavisPodcast.com and end your dependence on bottled water today. And speaking of technology, because water purification is a technology and the new stuff is amazing what they can do. And one of the things that's really cool, because I'm going to talk about podcasting here very shortly, is that the Bob Davis podcasts are now available all over the place. Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn, BlogTalkRadio.com, Google Play. If you have the Google Home, you can just find the podcast that way by talking to it. They are working on that to work with Stitcher.com, with Alexa. If you have Sonos, it's very easy to get the Bob Davis podcasts. And of course, you can always listen to the Bob Davis podcast right off the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. You can click on the streaming banner and click play. You can also turn that off, go down the page and listen to podcasts right off the page, or subscribe to the Bob Davis podcasts right off the page or through iTunes. And I think there's a couple new services. PodSearch is one of them, but there's a couple more I'll be telling you about in the near future. Also appreciate the likes and the shares and the favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter. And I'm making plans for the end of May, early June, and I appreciate the donations for diesel fuel at the Bob Davis Podcasts. .com. Yeah, I used to do this all the time, and podcast 719 actually made me think about it when I was telling the story of how much work it took for me to write the show I did with Tom Emmer every day. So I would fully write, scan, write, prepare, and read, and then write the show. And of course, he would be doing what he did during the day, reading the papers and so forth. And then we would reconnect at the end of every day. And it was literally 14 hours a day of work, including the show. And, you know, it was a labor of love, but that's what it took, that kind of meticulous effort. And I haven't done it lately. And I don't do it as much because, frankly, this is what everyone does now, and I have to find new things to do being the trailblazer that I am. And the other thing is that so much of the news today is so partisan and so much about opinion that you actually have to be very, very careful with. For example, I'm not going to include the stories about the most recent developments in the Russia-Trump thing, which involve supposedly a spy or a mole or an FBI informant in the Trump campaign, which turns out allegedly to be this professor at some school in England who talked to some of the key people, because it's just the first spate, the first wave of information about that. So I don't, I'm staying away from that stuff until we come to some conclusion. So I won't be including that in this little, you know, sort of report to get you ready for the week, because I don't think we've seen the other shoe drop on that particular story. I will say this, it's a significant enough story and it has the potential to completely upset the rest of the investigation, but that doesn't mean that it will, and it doesn't mean that it won't actually switch around to be something that's useful to Mueller and so forth. So I don't really want to talk about that until we get some resolution for it, because it has become so political. And the difference now versus then is I'm not grinding a partisan axe. I don't feel that I have to be right. I don't feel that I have to back one side or the other, because what's going to happen is going to benefit one side or the other. But there are things going on, as you know, that definitely interest me. So let's start. Number one, so you know that in the United States, the radio industry loves to tell people, we've never been stronger. I love this story, so listen up, because this is really to radio people. I see these articles all the time in the trades that run across my LinkedIn feed or something to that effect, that 96% of the population listens to the radio at least once a day, every day. And I'm just going to tell you flat out that I don't believe that number. I think that is wildly inflated. When I saw, and I've seen it a bunch of times, I conducted a survey recently of some people in younger demographics, just a very informal, you know, questioning, and not one of them reported listening to the radio at all for months. Even the ones that drove in their cars or rode the buses, all of them said they listened to podcasts or Spotify, no radio ever, or even the new Apple radio service that's kind of like Spotify. They don't listen to the radio. Then I actually sent Nielsen, the rating service, an email with a single question which said, do you have to say that you listen to the radio to get a people meter, which is how they measure radio now? It's a thing that you have to carry with you, and it picks up radio signals and reports them as listening. Well, there's a bunch of these crazy stories about meters. So Nielsen, when people don't, it's a long and involved thing, and I don't want to get into it in this podcast, but when people have a meter, they have to put it in this cradle every day, or I guess the new ones actually send the data anyway. But if the meter doesn't move, then it goes in op. And so Nielsen starts calling people and demanding that they carry their meter around, which is not good, because what that does is that skews the research to begin with. One person who had a meter was so furious that they actually taped the meter to a ceiling fan and turned it on and turned the radio on, public radio or something, and left it on all day and left the house because they didn't want to carry this thing around. Just recently, Nielsen announced that they're going to reissue the ratings for the past some enormous amount of time. I almost want to say 18 months in Los Angeles, California, because of these kinds of problems. And I have not received a reply from Nielsen, but it seems only logical that when you do a radio survey, the first thing that you want to determine is if somebody listens to the radio. If you're going to give them a meter, you're not going to give a meter to somebody that doesn't listen to the radio. And you're not going to be calling people up and saying, hey, by the way, we know you don't listen to the radio, but we want you to carry this meter around all day. You know, no wonder 96% of the population supposedly listens to the radio. But listen to this. In Britain, the government is discussing turning off the FM radio band. Let me repeat that. In Britain, the government is discussing turning off the radio band as listening surpasses 50% for digital. Yep. So how is it that in Britain, which has a smaller economy than California and a substantially lower living standard than the United States, listening to digital has surpassed 50%, while in the U.S. it's still 96% of the population listening to the radio and listening to FM, forget even AM. Radio listening, the fact is imploding because broadcasters just can't figure out how to create compelling content. It's just not in their DNA, especially in AM talk radio. And that's why I call podcasting the new talk, because it is. By the way, even in the U.S., most research surveys put podcast listening already at 35% and increasing. And really, podcasting has really only been a thing that is on anyone's radar since about 2013 or 14 or 15. So I've been podcasting since 2009. Others have been podcasting a lot longer, since at least the 2000s, the early 2000s. And it's the one thing that I am super passionate and biased and partisan about. And every now and then you see a number and you just don't believe it. I don't believe that 96% of the population listens to the radio. I don't believe that radio is having its best years ever, because when they say that, then you see all the financial data that says that radio companies are struggling to get revenue. Well, if everyone listens to the radio and it's stronger than ever, then where's all the revenue going? Well, it's going to digital. It's going to podcasts. It's going to Facebook. It's going to Google. It's going to Twitter, as well as these music services and podcasts that are out there. So I just don't believe it. And I don't mean to be nasty about it. I just think it's very interesting that, I mean, I was shocked when I saw that Britain is thinking about just dumping the entire FM band. Forget AM. They're dumping the FM band. And that brings me to more tech stuff. I wonder if you saw the recent Silicon Valley episode. I watch this show all the time. I talked about it in the last podcast about shows, where Silicon Valley took on Tesla and rich coders and tech people who all want to drive Teslas. And they made fun of the Tesla as a pet or prop for newly cash-engorged coders and other techies. There's a new study that actually, I've seen this data before, and I think it's fascinating. They've updated the data, and it remains the same. So you know that there are thousands of dollars of subsidies available from the federal government, and thousands of dollars of subsidies available, particularly in California, for people who drive electric cars. So when you buy it, you get a huge amount of subsidies. The new study says electric cars may pollute the environment more than the new gas engines, which are super clean. They always compare the Tesla to the 2007 Crown Vic or the 1989 Oldsmobile. But the fact is that the new gas cars are very efficient and very clean. Most electricity these days comes from coal or natural gas-powered power plants, which put out a lot of CO2. States and the federal government provide, as I said, thousands of dollars of subsidies per car to buyers of cars, as well as the fact that companies like Tesla live off of government subsidies to make the cars. And owners even get to charge the cars up for free, so they don't pay for that in many cases. Thing is, less than 10% of our energy comes from alternative energy sources. So all the subsidies, the free charging for the top 1% of the population that can afford a Tesla, will only increase as more and more of them are on the road. More pollution from fossil fuel power plants, higher energy costs for the rest of us. And I'm sorry to tell my liberal friends this, but they always say, but they're really neat and we've got to figure out a way to not use fossil fuels. Okay, then kill the subsidies and start charging for power at market rates, and then we'll see how many people want electric cars. Yeah, I got nothing against Tesla, nothing against electric cars, but what I do have a problem with is when people say that they are great and that they're cheaper and that they're better and better for the environment when they may not be. And by the way, this study really didn't even include toxic materials that are used in the construction and or the disposal of these cars when they reach the end of their life. So it's something to think about. So there is a cool tech story that I love. So there is now a new phone coming out. It is called the Red Hydrogen One. It is the first holographic smartphone. It is due to be released at the end of the summer. This is a phone that projects a 3D holographic image that the user can interact with. I don't know about apps. I know that it comes with a 3D camera as well. You will not need special glasses to see it. So a potential app would be an AutoCAD program for a phone. So a phone app for an AutoCAD program. So you could design an engine on an AutoCAD program, upload it to the phone, and then send the animation of the engine to the client. They could pull out their holographic phone and then project the image and be able to look inside the engine, see it work, look underneath it, and they would have a 3D model of it. As far as the phone's camera is concerned, there are sort of crude 3D systems. I don't know how they're going to do a 3D phone camera, but it's pretty cool, I think, and I want one. Back in the day, Grandma and Grandpa, when they ran the business, at the end of the day, they had a bag with all the checks and all the credit card charges and the cash, and that bag went to the bank, right? And that is how we got paid back in the day. Well, new technology has been evolving over the years, to become pretty reliable and pretty amazing when it comes to payment processing. I've been working with a company called ReliaFund, which does payment processing. And they want me to ask you, if you're a developer or if you're a small business or a big business and you're looking for payment processors and you're looking to process payments, but especially developers developing websites or back office systems for small and large businesses, if you are interested in being able to take credit card payments more affordably and easier, let me tell you about ReliaFund, ReliaFund. ReliaFund is a payment processor. They've been providing integrated solutions to get payments cleared for more than two decades. If you're developing an e-commerce site for clients, you developers, or you are developing back office stuff, the cool thing about ReliaFund is that you will talk to a human being, no artificial intelligence. And so if you call ReliaFund at 866-243-5040, that's 866-243-5040, you're going to be talking to Greg Lowry or Kevin Hill. You can also check them out online at ReliaFund.com, ReliaFund, ReliaFund.com, or click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. I'll tell you more about ReliaFund in the future. All kinds of news stories this weekend about China and the trade deficit and the potential for trade barriers and everything else. It's got companies skittish, and a lot of companies are thinking about reshoring a portion of their production in the United States. These days, there's reasons to manufacture in the United States. One of them is DepoStar, DEPOT, DepoStar. They do medical device stuff. They do high-tech avionics, stuff like that, as well as the standard CNC type stuff and design. DepoStar, American Design Engineering and Manufacturing. They are on it. Visit their website at DepoStar.com, DepoStar, DepoStar.com. Now, I don't know if you hate social media. Some people do. I've been saying for a long time that people need to stop freaking out about social media because what it leads to, so it's whether it's Amazon or social media, search engine giants, Facebook, that kind of a thing. There's a big push on to regulate these companies. In fact, Mark Zuckerberg famously asked Congress to regulate them, which is insane. There's a new law in Europe called the General Data Protection Regulation Law, which supposedly ensures that users own their data, which is a very popular idea in the United States. And actually, the truth is that that one really doesn't bother me. And I think eventually companies will offer it. Why? Why do I say that? Well, there is a disruption coming, supposedly, for Facebook, Apple, Google, Microsoft, and Amazon, these giant tech companies, which really are the largest cap companies on the stock exchanges today. It used to be that there were various, there was more variety in the top five, top six companies on the stock exchanges. Today, it's all tech companies, and in particular, these very large tech companies like Amazon. And of course, Walmart. Everybody used to hate Walmart. Now everyone loves Walmart, and they hate Amazon because it's the new company to hate, or Facebook, or a little bit less of Google. Google's kind of used to be the company everybody hated, and now I would say it's probably Amazon. I don't think Microsoft belongs in this group, but okay. So the new thing, as you know, are cryptocurrencies. These are currencies which are held in something called blockchain on the internet, and Some people call them a fad or a delusion, and other people call them the future. Blockchain, which is at the heart of cryptocurrency technology, is decentralizing monetary systems. Why? Well, it enables identity and association to be controlled by the user. So you own so much Bitcoin, but nobody knows that you own it. So it becomes a way to circumvent the current institutional systems, whether it's the federal government or state government or some other person that you don't want to have know what it is that you have. So there's some things going on with cryptocurrency and some of these other new decentralizing ideas. At the end of 2020, a new phone is coming out that will be based on cryptocurrency. So you'll use cryptocurrency to fuel the phone, and no one will know who owns the phone, and no one will know whose phone the data is, and so forth and so on. And they're talking also about what is called a cultural ethos that is now shifting to concerns about privacy among millennials and their successors. Therefore, crypto, blockchain, AI, robotics, all these things are now coming into play as really the next crust, the next development of high tech. And they're predicting that crypto, as I said, AI, robotics, and so forth will be extremely disruptive. I actually would submit, without really any research. I may have to do a podcast on this. I've certainly said it before. I think these new technologies in combination with these existing tech giants like Apple and Facebook and Google and Amazon and so forth, and even Uber type companies or Airbnb type companies, where they are basically brokering a service and the users are providing the service. And it's very disruptive to companies that have developed, like cab companies, where you picked up the phone and called a cab. Well, now you just go online to Uber, let's say. These kinds of disruptive systems are really possible in terms of their potential to decay and dissolve the industries and governments that we have known in the past. This is one of the things, it's a theme in these podcasts, and this is why I consistently say that people of a certain age in this country look back on the 50s and the 60s with this, real nostalgia as a time when things were understood, because what is rapidly coming is a world that is dominated by, artificial intelligence combined with things like robotics. I mean, when you have Henry Kissinger this weekend freaking out about the potential of artificial intelligence ending humanity, people demanding that governments regulate artificial intelligence, you therefore then just have the plot line of the HBO series Westworld. It's controversial. Scientists differ as to the potential effects and dangers of these new technology. And I am aware that the man who knew everything, Stephen Hawking, said that robots and AI will basically take over the world someday and overcome humanity. But then other people have said that cyborgs, in other words, humans with enhanced vision or enhanced brain power because computers will be implanted inside them, could be a possibility. I would just call all of this the new tech, a faster internet. If we can fix data privacy issues, if we can create stable, usable, and valuable currencies, if we can improve the speed and sustainability and accessibility of the internet, combined with robotics, smartphones, 3D holographic displays that are really good, and, as I said, a more robust and faster internet. Any guesses as to what I want? I want faster internet. You create a world where farms, factories, houses, and even roads are being built with intelligent robotic systems and on 3D printers and things of that nature. And by the way, these things aren't just pie in the sky. All of the things that I just mentioned are actually technologies. There are systems that farm. There are systems that work factories. There are systems that build houses. You can build houses with 3D printing. There are roads built. I don't know if you had a chance to hear the Google Assistant recently. This is something called the Google Assistant.
Good evening.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi. I'd like to reserve a table for Friday the 3rd.
Okay, hold on one moment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Hold on one second. Mm-hmm. So Friday, November 3rd. How many people?
for two people.
Two people?
Yeah.
What time?
At 5 p.m.
Okay. And your name?
The first name is Daniel. That's D-A-N-I-E-L.
Okay. You're all set.
Okay, great. Thanks.
We'll see you next Friday. Okay, thank you. Bye.
Well, that is a robot. That is artificial intelligence calling up a restaurant and making an appointment, or calling up a hair place and making an appointment for the client to get their hair done so that they don't have to do it. So it's like saying, Siri, call Fantastic Sam's and get me an appointment with Penny. And Siri does it. And the people that answer the phone at Fantastic Sam's, let's say, even though they don't make appointments, but anyway, they would never know that they're talking to a digital assistant. Sometimes when I call to pay bills, the systems that are used to answer the phones are so useful and effective that they're actually better than talking to a person. And that's only going to get better. So these are all technologies that are in existence. The fact is that our government is ancient, and while the ideas that motivated it, I think, are still good, basic ideas of liberty and ensuring checks and balances in government, things of that nature. But unfortunately, its practice is becoming sclerotic. So the way that our Congress works, the way our Senate works, the way our executive branch works, the way the judicial system works is not working very well. And the systems that they have created and erected to manage problems like poverty, let's say, aren't working very well. And there is a lot of sickness in modern society, whether it is drug and alcohol abuse, or whether it's, spousal abuse, or whether it's violence or crime, that are not being managed very well by the government. And in particular, I would point to the systems that are supposed to manage poverty and make people's lives better. Somebody told me tonight that only 14% of the population in this country actually has the experience of going to college and living in a dorm and, having the college experience, which is a shock. So we're not doing a very good job, our government, or maybe the citizens. And I don't believe the government can do a good job. And I think the more power that we give to the government, the less good job that it will do, because it's not designed to do that. And I believe that when you look at all these systems, technology systems, that something new is coming. And I would say that it is really sweeping change, and it may actually sweep away the governments. So there's something that really is probably unexpected, that people – it could happen very quickly. Once you introduce artificial intelligence on a broad basis to solve problems – once you introduce robotics on a broad basis to do things that human beings have been doing, obviously you have the problem of what are the new human beings going to do. I personally don't think that that is as big a problem as some people think. But really the question is, does it disrupt government, and does it reduce – would it be possible to have artificial intelligence do some of the things that the government does? And I don't mean giving artificial intelligence the keys to the nuclear codes. But I mean some of the things that government does that require so many people might not be necessary. So this is what I mean by disruption and basically cutting away the core of the sclerosis, which is all these people that work for state and local and federal governments. Second from last story in this podcast, remember the tax cut. Aside from the fact that in many states that your tax bill is going to be going up, yes, it will. You got a tax cut, and suddenly it's going to be easier to fill out your taxes. But as I told you when I read the tax bill, there are going to be some costs associated with it. There were things shifted and things changed, and they're still adjusting the code where they can. But in many states, your state tax bill is going to go up, and state coffers are suddenly full of revenue because of the shift in the tax code. But in addition to that, what they give, they take away. So you get a tax cut, but then you pay more in state taxes in some places. Now suddenly gas prices have skyrocketed. The United States people in the United States have spent an extra $4.4 billion just last month in increased gas prices. Prices in my state, Minnesota, are at their highest level since 2014. It's actually 10 cents higher here than it was a week ago. And I would say a sustained effect of high gas prices over 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 months completely will evaporate the effects of the tax cut. This is also the reason that they keep saying retail sales are increasing. The fact is that a large part of the retail sales increases are, in fact, fuel prices. So to end this podcast, I want to do a few words about the Minnesota governor's race for you folks in Minnesota. First of all, Education Minnesota, probably the most powerful lobby in the state, has endorsed retiring 1st District Congressman Tim Walz for governor. Walz is a retired teacher, and he's a retiring congressman. Aside from the double dipping on the pension front, just kidding, that was a little joke for the Democrats, because he would, of course, be getting a pension from Congress and a pension as a retired teacher. So if he becomes governor when he retires, he'll get a governor's pension as well. Great work if you can get it. I think Walz is the number one candidate for governor in 2018, certainly the number one Democrat candidate, but I think, as you'll see, he will be the number one candidate for governor in the state. The state Democratic convention is in June in Rochester, so we'll see about the endorsement, and then we'll see what happens with challengers Aaron Murphy, a state legislator for the Tony and Rich Summit Hill neighborhood of good old St. Paul, and Becky Otto, the state auditor. But the real action is over on the Republican side, where former Governor Tim Pawlenty has decided to skip the state convention, where he would have to fight the other candidates for endorsement. This is kind of a disappointment, because all of the interest in the Republican convention was what was going to happen when Tim Pawlenty showed up. He is going to run in the primary, and I would assume against whomever the Minnesota GOP endorses in Duluth, also in, I think, June, at the end of May, early June. Pawlenty's big thing is education. And by the way, of course, so is Tim Walz's. Pawlenty's big thing is the idea that he is going to make the middle class first. Because, you know, he's the son of a truck driver, and he grew up in this blue-collar town called South St. Paul. Gag. And I'm saying gag because it is a gag. It's gross. Here's the thing. Tim Pawlenty was one of the biggest lobbyists in Washington, working for the banking industry after he was governor and after he ran for president. Imagine that paycheck, first of all. And imagine that paycheck for Tim, because you know that banks are so middle class, right? And so the other thing about Tim Pawlenty is he's backed by the 14 or 15 or 7 or however many there are of the rich guys in Deep Haven and Minnetonka and Wayzata, Minnesota, which is out in the Lakes region. Guys, and by the way, if you're not from Minneapolis and St. Paul, used to be all the rich guys lived in Minneapolis. Now they all moved out to the suburbs. So that's where all the rich guys live, aside from the few that still live over on the east side. These are the guys that you know really care so much about the little guy, the middle first and all, that they are bankrolling Pawlenty and ignoring the potential nominees of the so-called grassroots political process in Minnesota. Now, Minnesota is unique because it has this political process that begins with the caucuses and it ends with the nomination process at the state conventions and the congressional district conventions, where the little guy literally can walk in off the street in February and become a delegate and participate in the process all the way through the conventions. So Tim Pawlenty, who claims he's got in too late, so he's doing us all a favor by avoiding a fight in Duluth at the Minnesota GOP convention, which, by the way, is BS, is backed by the guys who want to get rid of that process. And they're doing everything they can do, and they've wanted to get rid of this process for a long time. They've gotten laws passed, so we now have a primary and a caucus, because last year, all the people came in to vote for, Trump or Rubio, and they wanted to do the straw poll at the caucus, and then they left. Because after you vote, you basically ask people to volunteer, and that's how the process works, except it isn't working, at least on the Republican side. Nobody shows up. Nobody does anything. It's the same 12, 15 guys who are doing all the work at the BPOU, the basic political unit level, in most of the Republican districts in the state. Some of them are so hollowed out, they do nothing. And the same is true, a little bit less true, but still true, of the congressional districts in the metropolitan area, particularly the 4th and 5th district, where they have a dearth of people stepping up to help. And so the rich guy's solution to this is basically to ignore this process. So Pawlenty is sticking it to Hennepin County Commissioner Jeff Johnson, who's retiring and running for his second shot at the governor's mansion as well. He will probably be the nominee, the endorsee, I should say, for the state convention. But the theory is that, you know, the rich guys don't think Jeff Johnson can win the a statewide race because Jeff Johnson is too conservative. And as far as Republicans are concerned, actually, Jeff Johnson is probably the guy who more reflects what Republicans want than Tim Pawlenty, because Tim Pawlenty is running around with this populist, theology of making the middle first. And what's happened is the rich guys in Minnetonka have been hanging around the political process and ruining things in this state for a long time. And they're the people that say, but Tim Pawlenty can win. So he's the guy that we want to, see nominated. And what they're doing is they're calling up all the BPOU guys and all the CD chairs and all the CD officers, and they're trying to get them to back Tim Pawlenty over Jeff Johnson. And for Jeff, it's just sad because, It's a little bit different process than what's going on in the Democratic Party, which is not without its own rifts, by the way. And I will reveal a little bit of my own bias here because I can't stand Republican moderates, usually because they exemplify a Republican Party with no principles. Pawlenty says he's going to actually spend more money on stuff, but he'll hold the state government accountable. And for you conservatives, this is the same thing Barack Obama said. I'm going to make big government work. By the way, oddly enough, Donald Trump has said pretty much the same thing. And come to think of it, Richard Nixon and Johnson, too. Everybody's going to make big government work for them, but they don't. So, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. It won't be very interesting to see what happens at the Republican convention, because they've apparently already decided to endorse Jeff Johnson, because Tim Pawlenty's out at the state convention. Then he's going to run in the primary. And then what they'll do is the rich guys will outspend Johnson 20-1. You know, a governor's race costs about $30 million in this state. So they will just drop all kinds of money on the primary. And then they'll just re-up for the general. And we'll have a race between two very moderate, politicians, typical milquetoast Minnesota politicians. It's very frustrating for people who have tried to get the political process in this state to work and failed month and month and year after all. By the way, not to their effort, but due to the fact that the powers that be in the state of Minnesota, where corruption is legal, do not want the little guy to have a say. They pay lip service to the little guy. That's what Tim Pawlenty is going to run around talking about, the middle first, and then I'm for the little guy. But he's really not. He's for the bankers and the rich guys. And their big thing is education, so that they have an educated workforce and they don't care where the money comes from and how it works. They just need somebody to make it work, which is nonsense. It's just more money spent on education. And ultimately, it means more state spending and it means higher taxes in the state of Minnesota by Republicans. And it is sad for the Minnesota GOP that things are ending this way. Maybe we'll get a surprise. You never know. Okay, here's the first spot. Three, two, one. Well, I'm going to be talking about one of the stories in this podcast involves the electric car and the potential for pollution to be greater with electric cars. And I don't concern myself too much with carbon, three, two, one. Three, two, one. So thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast, podcast 723. Kind of fun to go through all those news stories and pull a few just to get you started for the week. Appreciate you listening online, on the page, at thebobdavispodcast.com, whether it's your phone or your iPad or your desktop. Sounds like so old to have a desktop, but I do appreciate the listening and the sharing and the favoriting and
fighting flames of fire. Burning wires, we don't care anymore. Are we fading lovers? We keep wasting colors. Maybe we should let this go. We've fallen apart, still we hold together. We've passed the end, still we chase forever.